The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright. The power to create a happier, healthier life drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected. A place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California, and I'm so glad you could be with me because we have a really tremendous show for you tonight. And we have a really tremendous guest with us, Annie Kagan, who wrote the book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. Her brother died all of a sudden and then came to her to have her share his afterlife experiences, which are exceptionally profound. Although she didn't want to initially, Billy convinced her to write his book to give the message not only to herself and to her friends, but to the masses, that death has been portrayed as something completely different from what it is. Billy Fingers' story, as told to Annie, is so insightful that I just knew that you would all enjoy it immensely. It again serves to remind us that there is so much more to this 3D world than we are actually seeing. There are many quantum physicists who are revealing that since energy cannot die, it means that when you die, you simply take on a different form while you become your true self once again. Isn't that amazing? Greg Braden has stated this fact too, that since energy will always exist, you were present when the earth was formed. As a matter of fact, you were present when the universe was formed. Therefore, your journey in life is simply a physical expression of your true self. And as Dr. Bruce Lipton has stated many, many times, cells do not die because the energy doesn't die. Therefore, reincarnation does exist, and it's proven through cellular biology. Scientist after scientist are revealing that we are all a part of this cosmic consciousness, and our personalities, our personhood, continues on. Now, if that doesn't take the fear out of death, I don't know what will. And I know that there are many who have lost loved ones and feel so alone, especially during the upcoming holidays. But I want to let you know that your loved ones are not dead as you accept death to be. They have simply experienced a rebirth into their true selves. Even though you cannot see them physically, does not mean that they don't see you and that they aren't with you. And when you let go of the grief, you're better able to feel their presence. And you may even be able to experience a dialogue with them, as Annie has experienced. I think this time in history, we're supposed to be getting a bigger picture of the expansion of this thing that we call life and this thing that we call consciousness. So get ready for a great story filled with great insight, and we will be right back after these words on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Law of Attraction Radio Network, enhancing the well-being of millions of listeners worldwide. LOARadionetwork.com is heard through 25 different internet radio stations, as well as iTunes Radio, Stitcher.com, and our mobile apps. The Law of Attraction Radio Network, your trusted source of daily inspiration at LOARadionetwork.com. Need help realizing your dreams? As a hypnotherapist specializing in the law of attraction, Jules Johnson can help you to break through your critical mind into your manifested dream. Get started today by going to lawofattractiontools.com. Set up a personal Skype video or phone session. Law of Attraction Tools is there to help you turn your desires into reality. That's lawofattractiontools.com.
Okay, we are back. I just want to mention to not forget to sign up for your free subscription to the Science Behind the Law of Attraction magazine. On December 1st, we are starting to charge per issue. So stop what you're doing right now and go to lawofattractionmagazine.net and sign up immediately. This is my personal thank you to all of our wonderful listeners. The December issue of the magazine has some very, very powerful articles by Pam Grau, Joe Vitale, Jack Canfield, Janet and Chris Atwood, and many, many, many more. I am so delighted to be bringing you more messages in a different media format that tells you that you're not only powerful, you're pretty darn magnificent. So remember, lawofattractionmagazine.net. So let's get on with today's show. Annie Kagan, a chiropractor and songwriter living in Manhattan, abandoned her hectic city life in search of serenity in a small, secluded house by the bay. When her brother Billy died unexpectedly and began speaking to her from the afterlife, Annie agreed to accompany him on his journey through the mysteries of death. As Billy reaches from the other side to change his sister's life and the lives of those around her, he shares secrets about bliss and wonder that comes while living in the afterlife. The fascinating true story of her ongoing after-death communication with her brother Billy is recounted in her book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me That There Is Life After Death. To find out more about this incredible story or to purchase the book, go to afterlifeofbillyfingers.com. Welcome, Annie, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I am thrilled to have you on my show.
And I'm so happy to be here with you, Jules.
You have an incredible story, as you are revealing, actually, your brother's story. And it is pretty amazing, and it's pretty wonderful, everything that is being said. So I was hoping that we could start off at the beginning for those of my listeners who have not heard of Billy Fingers yet. They will. And they will remember this interview because it will touch the very essence of their life. Could you start at the beginning and tell us what happened and why he is really kind of coming through you?
Yes. Well, all my life, I thought of Billy as kind of my bad boy brother. He was my older brother. Actually, the subtitle of the book is How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. And that's because Billy always had addiction problems on and off for his entire life. And at the end of his life, the last several years of his life, he really lost his battle with his addictions. And it was a very, very difficult time for both of us. And he died. He was actually hit by a car when he was intoxicated and running across a highway. And the news was completely devastating. And of course, I was grieving for his loss. And then 3 weeks after he died, it was my birthday. And just as I was waking up, like right when the sun was coming up, I heard his voice really clear calling my name. And he was saying like, Annie, it's me. Get up. And of course, I thought I was dreaming because Billy was dead. So how could he be talking to me? And then he told me to get up and get a notebook and start writing down what he was saying. And the first thing that he did was to comfort me and to assure me that he wasn't suffering anymore and that he was drifting through a beautiful divine universe, nurtured by lights, nurtured by higher beings, and that so far it was very enjoyable. Actually, it couldn't be better. That was his humorous way of putting things, and that we would definitely meet again. And what was amazing was that before his visit, I could barely get out of bed. But the beautiful atmosphere of his world flowed into me. And I felt really serene while he was speaking to me. And that was the first of many communications that we had where he described in real time what was happening to him in the next life.
Wow. That was a pretty powerful experience, but you really had a hard time believing it at first, huh? Did you have to pinch yourself, or yeah, you felt good, but did you have doubts that it was really happening?
I absolutely had doubts. I never had doubts while it was happening, because while it was happening, I felt him. I knew it was him. It was so real. And then afterwards, I thought, you know, I'm probably like making this up to make myself feel better, because how could somebody be really talking to me from another dimension, especially my brother who died in such a state of confusion, to be so clear and to be telling me really the secrets of the universe seemed impossible.
What was his first experience when he died? Did he even recognize that he died? Because was he intoxicated or on drugs when he died? So did he recognize what was happening?
He said that as soon as the car hit, he was sucked out of his body into a beautiful healing chamber of light, and that all of his pain was erased from his entire lifetime. And he was immediately healed. And he reported seeing my father, and my father was joking around with him, which if you knew my father, that's exactly what he would do. He was joking around. And then he went up a beautiful chamber, and he was delivered into really a whole different universe, and all his pain was gone. And he wanted to assure me of that. And I think that that's a really important thing for people to know, that their loved ones, no matter how they die, no matter what circumstance they die, that they're healed.
They go on to another dimension. They retain their own physical or their own mental thoughts about their life on Earth. They remember everything.
Well, one of the things that he said that was surprising is he was still him, but the part of us that goes on is our soul. It's the highest part of ourselves that goes on. Later on, he reviewed his life, but he did retain his personality, which, I mean, I'd never really thought a lot about death before this happened, but if you had asked me what I thought, I guess I thought that we kind of return to a pool of bliss and that we would lose our identity, but he very much maintained his identity.
And did he understand about his addiction? Was it his life's plan to have the addiction, or was it something that he was trying to escape? In other words, did he get clarity as to what happened while he was on Earth?
Oh, I love that question, Jules. Thank you so much for asking that, because that's a very important part of the story, which is when he does finally get to view his life, he says that his addiction was something that he chose to explore before he came to Earth, which is not the way we think about it, right? We think about it as, a terrible problem that people shouldn't have. But he explains that it was his spiritual path and that his struggle with addiction was the most important part of his life. And people can really relate to that because I think that the hard things that we go through and the difficult things that we go through, sometimes we feel really bad about having our problems. And Billy makes it really okay to have our problems, to have problems of addiction, that it's okay. And he said it was indeed and actually the most interesting part of his life. So that kind of turns everything that we think on its head.
Wow, very powerful. So when he crossed over, did he, you mentioned light, and just lately the word light has been coming into my life, that there's different frequencies of life and there's different colors associated with it. Did he kind of talk about that light in greater detail?
He did. It was one of the first things that he talked about. And he said that on Earth, we see light through our physical eyes. But in the next dimension, we feel light and experience it with our soul. And that light actually has a personality. Like the light is compassionate and loving and kind and intelligent. And the fact that you experience the nature of the light on the next level makes the fact that the divine really does exist irrefutable. So here, we kind of struggle with, is there a divine? Isn't there a divine? But once you pass to the other side, once you transition over, there's no more question about it. You know that there is a divine world, and you know that that's your true home.
Wow. Wow, beautiful. So is it more like we're all energy and there is just no such thing as death?
Death is just a doorway. And as I say these words to you, like death is a doorway and that we're eternal beings, it's so easy to kind of say those words, right?
Right.
Like I'm so used to saying those words already. So I have to pause every day and remind myself that that has deep meaning. Like, what if death is really a doorway? And we're really eternal divine beings. That will change your entire life. That not only will bring great comfort to the experience of death, but it will change your whole concept of life. And I think that's one of the gifts that Billy brings to people.
Absolutely. And that's kind of why I wanted to bring you on my show right now in this particular day. I mean, we're a few short days of Thanksgiving and the holiday, and it seems to grip people with their grief during this time. And I thought it is such a comfort to hear these beautiful words through you about death and your brother, because it just makes everything seem wow. There's just more than we could possibly understand.
Yes, and I think that it's very important because I get so many emails every day from people, who've lost loved ones and they're grieving and children and husbands and I'm actually a very private person, and it's really hard for me to come out and say the things that I do, but I feel compelled to say that the fact that you're going to, that your loved ones still exist and that they're there for you and that the love still exists and that you will see them again is not just some fairy story that's been made up to make you feel better. That I have to believe it because of what happened to me with everything within me. And just because I'm the one who's here who had this experience, and if you look at my life, I think everything in my life was kind of pointing me here. It doesn't mean that Billy loves me more or that I'm more spiritual. It was just kind of our fate in the way our lives lined up. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that your loved one loves you any less or that they're not there for you. And so I just want to bring that news that this isn't a fairy tale. It's real. It's real. And you will be reunited. And they are there. And the love is still there.
So how involved is Billy in your life today? I mean, you wrote a wonderful best-selling book here. How involved is he still in your life?
Well, right now he's extremely involved in my life. I took a big vacation in the summer. I really asked him to give me a little space. And he did. And the things that have been happening lately have been so profound. I've had so much proof every day, you know, and I think I'm kind of tend to be a rather serious person. And he's constantly reminding me to be a little less serious, to take things less seriously, to lighten up a little bit. Lately, he does a lot of skywriting for me in pink.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he'll write little things, little messages in the sky in pink. And so I would say that he's very involved. And his message lately is, you know, please enjoy yourself as much as you can. And that's what I tell people a lot who write to me who are grieving. And I think people should have their grief and it should be natural and they should take their time. But also, your loved ones are well and they want you to be well and they want you to have a happy life. And sometimes he says to me, you know, enjoy yourself enough for both of us. Mm. So healing is a good thing. Sometimes people feel really guilty when they heal. You know, they feel like they should be sad. And also another important thing is I got a letter from a lovely woman whose husband was sick for a really long time. And she said, you know, I loved him so much, but I was cranky at the end because, you know, it was hard. Mm-hmm. And does he know how much I loved him? And that's all they know. That's all they know. I mean, Billy and I were in so much conflict at the end of his life. And I had so much guilt. And anybody who deals with addiction, you know, when the addict dies, you always feel, or when people are sick, you always feel like you could have done more. Right. But the only thing that's really left is love. Mm-hmm. And they want you to heal. They want you to heal. They want you to enjoy your life again. That's really important for people to understand.
Hmm. So does he help you with the book? I mean, he really wanted you. No ifs, ands, buts about it. He wanted you to write this book as a message to the physical world.
100%. And I worked really, really hard on the book. And again, it was fate because I was a lyricist before. And a lyricist works to try to make every word count. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when Billy wrote, everything that Billy wrote, because people who haven't read the book, it's like a conversation where Billy talks and then I talk. And every word that Billy wrote came out perfectly word after word after word, I struggled with my part. So I felt like I was going to pretend that it was a novel. That was the first thing I was going to do. Because I really didn't want to be known as the woman who talks to her dead brother, who's this kook. Like, that's not how I wanted to be seen. And so he played along with me at the beginning. Yeah, okay, we'll make believe it's a novel. But then, like, I kept having experiences and meeting people. And I took my chances. And the first person I told, who I didn't know, I only had told a very small group of people. And I document in the book all the different things that happened. So the first person that I told, I went on a trip and I got a massage. And I don't know why, I just told this person that my dead brother was talking to me and the things he was saying. And then after the massage, I looked and he was crying. He had just tears rolling down his face. And it turned out that his young sister had just died. And she just died really fast. She had been well, and it happened really quick. And he felt like, you know, that his sister had sent me to him to let him know she was okay. And wow. That kept happening over and over until, you know, I just knew that I had to share the story, that it really wasn't up to me to keep it to myself. So I'm still kind of like kicking and screaming, telling the story like, oh no. But I do it because I'm compelled to do it.
Wow. What do you think his bottom line message is to the world with the book? Is that it's not what we think. We've got to move out of the fairy tale land of death being an ending.
I think that everyone who reads the book gets something different from it, which is amazing, because there's something about Billy's words that are very alive. And so some of it's about death, but I think also some of it's about life and how to empower yourself in this life. I think he wants everyone to become their own authority, to have their own beliefs, to examine things, and to know that you already deserve to be loved, no matter what your circumstance is. And if there's anything, Jules, that I think is the main message, is that what we think of as God or the divine, how does he put it? If you took all the universes and put them in a line in the whole galaxy, what you think of as the divine and what the divine really is and how good and wonderful and compassionate and loving is farther away from that first galaxy to the last. So it's so unimaginable, the goodness and wonder of it, that we can't really grasp in our minds. So that's beautiful.
So he's telling us and helping us to empower ourselves as we are on our journey in this thing called life. What does he say to a person and our beliefs, like about money, about striving, about how do we make our journey easier? Or is that even an issue?
No, it's definitely an issue. And I think that the way he puts it and the way I use it is he talks a lot about quantum viewpoint. So the way you view something, there's a scientific experiment called Schrodinger's cat. And it's a quantum physics experiment. So I'll give you Billy's version of it, because his version is, you know, if you have a cat, because I love cats, but my father hated cats. So when my father was in the room with a cat, it was very different for the cat than when I was in the room with the cat, because I love the cat. So what he's teaching is that the way we view something really affects that something. And to take the viewpoint
that feels the best to you, that empowers you the most, that makes life more fun and more manageable and puts you more in control. So I'll give you an example with me where, you know, I kept thinking, oh my God, I don't want to be the author of a book written with my dead brother. It's like that viewpoint, I just hated it. So he said to me when he was talking about quantum viewpoint, he was saying, well, why don't you change your viewpoint? Because I love mysteries. I watch mysteries on TV. I read P.D. James. I just love mysteries. So he said, well, why don't you think of yourself as a cosmic detective with the chance to explore the greatest mystery of all, like what happens after we die? So when I changed my viewpoint about what I was doing, suddenly it became a lot of fun. So you need to explore the way you view every situation to empower yourself and to bring yourself joy.
That's beautiful. I love that. And I agree with that. It's what I termed the law of observation and your perception of it. But what would Billy say to your dad who wasn't comfortable about cats? Would he say for your dad to leave the room and just forget the cats? Or what would he said?
He'd tell my dad to go get a dog. You know, it's like, he's really into being natural, be yourself. But sometimes you're in a circumstance, right? You find yourself in a circumstance that, so he says, you know, life is about dramas that change you. And the circumstances of our lives, they're like alchemical tools that are supposed to help us transform. And sometimes you're in a circumstance that you may not want to be in. So, but you could control the way you see yourself. You could control your costume, your dialogue, the production. So there are many, many things, many tools that you can have to make it so that you feel like it's yours. So you could participate. Like he says, you know, you may have a certain circumstance, but you do the casting. You could always control the way you see yourself. And you should always see yourself in a positive light and an empowering light, because that will change your circumstances little by little.
So what Billy is trying to tell us is whatever we do, we got to make ourselves feel better over it.
That's right. And you have to empower yourself. And I would say that, you know, in life we're taught, what does he say? You are the universe, but society teaches limitation.
Yeah.
We're taught, yes, it's really good to reach out to others, but also you have to learn to be your own authority. You have to see life through your own eyes and learn to figure things out for yourself. And that becomes really a wonderful, fun adventure to make it up as you go along. Like the way after Billy, the way I tend to see my life, I almost see my life as a bit of a video game, right? And things are coming. And I use the creative element to work with what comes my way. I don't always control what comes my way, but I could make the lemonade, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, you can make the lemonade. With Billy looking back in life, is there anything that he could tell a person who is currently addicted or has had past addictions? Is there just one thing that he could reveal to them to make their life a little bit easier? Or is that a non-issue because they simply came here to experience it?
I think that what I would say would be what I hear from so many people on Facebook and emails is that, oh, wow, it's okay to have an addiction issue. Like, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because it's really okay. It's okay to have that be in your life. It's like someone who's ill, you know. It's okay to have that. And once you stop fighting it, and once you make it okay and not shameful, then you could make that path so much more enjoyable. I spoke to Tex right before this call. She's one of the people in the story of the book. And she had an addiction problem. And she said, oh God, it's so important to everyone who has that kind of problem, because it takes the shame out of it. There's nothing wrong with it. It's really okay. And to the families of people who have addiction problems, I would say something that I wish I knew at the time, which is, you know, to detach with love. You get so involved in the game of the addiction game, and just take a step back, love them, but realize, you know, you really can't solve the problem for them. So detach, let them get the help they need, and just be loving. That would be the best advice that I could give.
That's powerful. So it's okay for them to experience, but unfortunately what I'm getting out of all this is that society is asking them to conform with the shame. And it's like it's up to them to take their power back, and we should not even be shaming them. We have no idea if that's their life's mission or not.
Exactly. And one of the things that he says that's like really beautiful is that he left me a coin, and it said, but for the grace of God, right? And you can never really know what anybody else's circumstance means about them. And you can't even know what your circumstance means about yourself. Like, Billy had these really difficult addiction problems. He was also a loving, wonderful human being. And it turns out, you know, he was like a very high spirit. So it doesn't mean that you have to like what somebody else is doing, like, or even you don't have to enjoy necessarily the hard parts of your life. Like, I have many hard parts to my life. And then Billy will say, oh, well, you're just learning, you know, higher mathematics right now. So you can embrace your difficulties, but it doesn't mean you have to like pretend that it's wonderful to have something really hard. You do your best. You know, addiction is difficult, you know, and sure. And one of the amazing parts of the story is where, you know, I'm thinking, well, Billy didn't even win his battle at the end of his life, no matter how hard he tried. His addictions were so entrenched and ingrained at that point, and he didn't win. So why did he go to this incredibly high place in the afterlife? And through a series of stories and events, and leading me to the story of Faust, really, it's like at the end of Faust's life, even though he struggled with the devil and lost, or struggled with his demons and lost, it didn't matter, because he was always reaching for the good. And it was actually the struggle itself that helped his soul evolve. We always think it's about winning or losing. And sometimes it's just going through the thing that makes you wiser, and that your soul came here to do. And I just want to say that all this is way beyond me. Like, I'm just repeating Billy's words, but, you know, they're very high concepts.
Wow. It's very powerful. Very powerful. Wow. I love it. Goodness gracious. So let me ask a couple of more questions. Like, did Billy go to school over there? I mean, what is it like? I've heard different stories from people that have passed over, but what is it like for him? Does he go to school? Is he in a house? What is it like?
Well, Billy mentions in one chapter called The Super World that most people, or a lot of people, when they pass over, they meet their relatives and they're in houses and they do all those things that you're speaking about. But he actually went to a higher level. He really wasn't, he was only interested in God. And one of the things that he did was he led me to these journals that he had been writing at the end of his life, which I had no idea existed. And every entry is to the divine. Like, he was super, super spiritual, even in his pain. And he went to like a really high place, and he right away met higher beings. And one of the things that I love is that, you know, you really change in the afterlife. He was evolving all the time. He was changing even more rapidly than we change here. And one of the ways that happened was he received all of this unconditional love and compassion and complete understanding of everything he was and everything he did. And when you have that viewpoint from others, you start to feel that towards yourself. So you have to learn to be more and more self-loving. That's what receiving that kind of divine love does. It just by receiving it, you become more loving. And then also what's really beautiful is he's reunited with his spiritual tribe, which we may all be happy to realize that we all have these different spiritual tribes, which kind of explains that there are so many, so many different paths to the divine. So it's not like one way is right, but we all have these spiritual families that we will reunite with also, aside from just families, because some people have great families and some people really are at odds and feel not at all at home in their families. But everyone has a true spiritual tribe.
This is powerful. What about reincarnation? Is Billy going to come back to experience perhaps a life without addiction, or does he need to come back?
Well, according to Billy, he's not coming back to this plane. He's going on. And so that's why what he says in the book is a little different, because it's like the last life on earth. And what's so surprising and shocking really about that is we all think that, oh, you know, those of us who believe in reincarnation, like, you have to be perfect so that you won't have to come back. You have to reach some level of complete perfection. Well, that's certainly not what happened to Billy. So we don't know. And you know what? I love that, not knowing. Like, we don't know exactly the meaning of what we're doing here. So, you know, live the mystery of life with as much sweetness as you can is what he's always telling me. So there is reincarnation according to him. And sometimes we reincarnate on earth and sometimes we go on to different levels in the afterlife. But there's always about evolution. Everything is about evolving and changing and becoming wiser, I would say.
So does he have hope for the future of the planet, for the people, for humanity?
You know, he doesn't talk about that, actually. And that's too big a question for me to ask him. I'd be like really afraid to ask him that. And since he doesn't talk about it, I try not to venture, and it's already a lot.
But his message is that we probably need to stop making life so difficult for ourselves and start enjoying it. Isn't that the bottom line?
Absolutely. Like, there are things that are serious, but most of the things that a lot of us think about are not at all serious. And enjoy your life, go after your dreams, love, but love yourself, you know, really love yourself. And the fate of humanity, that's way over my head. I can't even handle the fate of myself. So,
well, if everyone gets happy, if everyone starts appreciating what they have instead of focusing on what is going wrong, then humanity can only evolve to a higher level. But when we get stuck in the fear of living day-to-day life, that's when the evolution stops on the planet.
Well,
so I think that's what Billy's trying to convey to us. Keep on evolving.
Well, what he does say that reminds me of what you just said is that, you know, on the other side, you're never thinking about what you don't have. It's never about, I don't have this, I don't have that. But it's also a really benign world. And one of the things that Billy has helped me accept is that this plane of existence has light and shadow. And that being the good girl, I'm always waiting for everything to be perfect in my interpretation of the word perfect before I can enjoy myself. And he's taught me that, no, there's light and shadow. It can't always be noon. And enjoy the dark, enjoy the light. What does he say? Like, let the moments fill you, all the moments, all the different things, because we're here to experience lots of different emotions. Just be on your own side. Try to be on your own side instead of against yourself.
Oh, I like that a lot. That is very powerful. So are you going to be writing another book with him?
Aha! Uh-huh. That's the next great mystery.
What if he approached you on it, would you do it?
Well, he tells me that I can do whatever I want, that I had to write the first book, and you have no idea how all pervasive he was about that. Like, I really didn't have a choice. But the book was, you know, I really had to go into isolation. It was a very particular thing. I don't know. I know that there's going to be more stuff. I don't know what the stuff is going to be. I don't know if it'll be something more visual or music. I really don't know. And that feels really great. And I feel really happy that he's giving me a choice. That's fantastic.
Well, great. If you're feeling good about what's coming, that's even better, because we know then it's going to be fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
It is, and I can hardly wait for the next venture here.
Ah.
Annie, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing what Billy has given you. This is absolute delight. Perfect timing for the world to hear right now, and I can't thank you enough for saying yes, I'll write the book.
Oh, and thank you for helping me share.
My pleasure. And please, with your next venture, come back on and tell us what's going on. We'd love to follow you.
I promise.
Now that was fun, and it's great information. Check out their book by going to the afterlife of billyfingers.com. Now we have heard from Billy Fingers and his sister Annie, but now let's go a bit deeper with medical doctor and professor Robert Lanza, who answers the question, is there an afterlife? And he says, yes, the science of biocentrism can prove that there is. As he explains it, the universe only exists because of the individual's consciousness of it. Essentially, life and biology are central to reality, which in turn creates the universe. The universe itself does not create life. The same applies to the concept of space and time, which Professor Lanza describes simply as tools of the mind. Professor Lanza recalls a story about Einstein in which his old friend had just died. Einstein stated, quote, "Now Besso has departed from this strange world a little ahead of me. That means nothing. People like us know that the distinction between the past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion," unquote. In fact, it was Einstein's theory of relativity that showed that space and time are indeed relative to the observer. Quantum theory ended the classical view that particles exist if we don't perceive them. But if the world is observer created, we shouldn't be surprised that reality is created by each of us. Nor should we be surprised that space and time vanish, and with them all the Newtonian concepts of order and prediction. In a message posted on Professor Lanza's website, he explains that this theory in mind and concept of death as we know it cannot exist in any real sense. Essentially, the idea of dying is something that we have long been taught to accept, but in reality, it just exists in our minds. Professor Lanza says biocentrism is similar to the idea of parallel universes. In much the same way as everything that could possibly happen is speculated to be occurring all at the same time across multiple universes, he says that once we begin to question our preconceived concepts of time and consciousness, the alternatives are huge and could alter the way we think about the world in a way not seen since the 15th century's flat earth debate. Well, guess what, dear listeners? We law of attraction followers and practitioners are questioning our preconceived concepts of time and consciousness each day. And we are attracting more and more incredible new ways in which to think and expand the concept of our world. The law of attraction goes way beyond our materialism. It goes way beyond our 3D world, dear listeners. You and I are attracting this profound information in which we are shifting the planet. We are not choosing to get stuck in the media or get stuck in the deception of the 3D world. We're choosing to go beyond and to live that life that we are supposed to live by attracting vast new information to us. This is the law of attraction, and this is our reality. Well, that's it for tonight. We'll be back next week with another great show of Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to jules@loaradionetwork.com and have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network. This is RJ Banks from loaaffirmations.com with another I Am Inspiration. You know, one of the key processes in selective manifestation is living as if, or living from the end. Now this, in my opinion, is one of the most important and critical aspects of the process, as it infuses your true beliefs, your undeniable faith, and your deep-seated feelings and emotions. And the door that opens this as-if reality is your imagination. Your imagination is your very own world in which you have total control. It's your blank canvas, so to speak, and no one else in the world has any right to tell you what you can or cannot imagine. The great Albert Einstein is quoted as stating that imagination is more important than knowledge, and that logic will get you from point A to point B, but imagination will take you everywhere. Now think back for a moment when you were a child. Remember the incredible adventures you'd go on using your imagination? Whether it was having an upscale tea party with your royal dolls or stuffed animal collection, or saving the planet as a superhero. As Einstein stated, imagination will take you everywhere. You know, manifestation in the physical world, starting as far back as at least the wheel, all began in someone's imagination. So once you've decided what your desires are, it's imperative that you reignite your imagination and spend time daily living as if. In fact, I look at it as one of the rare opportunities to cohesively and simultaneously use and work with both your conscious and subconscious minds together at the same time. So think about it. Meditate on it. Use your as-if imagination to dominate over your as-is ego. And living as-if sparked in your imagination will begin the divine universal process of manifesting your desires into the physical. Write down and declare, I am now creating the life I desire, living as-if through my imagination. Thanks again for listening, and we're so grateful that you're part of our LOA family. For more downloadable Law of Attraction audio affirmations, please visit loaaffirmations.com. And always keep it right here on the Law of Attraction Radio Network. Thank you for listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network. This is RJ Banks from loaaffirmations.com. And this is today's I Am Inspiration from the upcoming new book, The Power of the I Am and the Law of Attraction. Today, I am abundant. Now, we've all had money struggles from time to time, and we know that obsessing, focusing, and worrying about them only makes matters worse. Now, remember, focus equals fuel. Now, there's an old Chinese proverb that says, you cannot prevent the birds of sorrow from flying over your head, but you can prevent them from building a nest in your hair. In other words, yes, you can and will feel these emotions from time to time. But don't obsess over them or let them build a nest in your brain. Accept them and then release them to your higher power. So first, I want you to affirm, and you might want to write these down. I am the master of and control my own thoughts. And next, affirm, I am worthy of financial abundance. A great affirmation that I've repeated countless times when starting to feel financially stressed is, I am always blessed with more than enough money for everything that I want, need, or desire. And as challenging as it may be to defy your logic, don't worry about the how. It will be presented to you, but you must keep your faith and an indestructible belief in your worthiness and the power of the I Am and the Law of Attraction. Thanks again for listening, and we're so grateful that you're part of our LOA family. For more downloadable Law of Attraction I Am audio affirmations programs, please visit loaaffirmations.com. And always keep it right here on the Law of Attraction Radio Network.